Bitty bite.
Where did she go, Emma?
She is gone, my child.
Stolen, like so many others.
But where?
I lift the child's chin. Her eyes are sunken with hunger.
Come, let's go find food together.
But the child grows older, her questions not so easily turned away.
She knew where to find food. We need her.
And that's why she's gone. Why they stole her.
You have the gift within you too, my child. Listen. Watch. We'll find food, some grass, some grain.
Will she be back?
She is beyond the wall. She is dead to us now.
No, she will not be back.
My sister Venda is one of them now. The last testaments of Gaudrell. Chapter 48.
They call it the City of Dark Magic. We stared at the ruins rising from the sands like sharp, broken fangs. At least now I knew we weren't in Morrigan anymore. I know what it is, I said to Caden. Royals hear stories, too. As soon as I saw the ruined city, I knew what it was. I'd heard it described many times. It lay just beyond the borders of Morrigan. I noticed the others had fallen silent. Grizz stared ahead under thick, scowling brows. What's the matter with them? I asked.
The city. The magic. It raises their hackles, Caden said.
A shrug followed his answer, and I knew he had no such reservations.
A sword is no good against spirits, Finch whispered.
But the city has water, Malik said, and we need it.
I had heard many colorful stories about the dark, magical city. It was said it was built in the middle of nowhere, a place of secrets where the ancients could practice their magic and offer untold pleasures for a price. The streets had been made of gold, the fountains flowed with nectar, and sorceries of every kind were to be found. It was believed that spirits still jealously guarded the ruins, and that was why so many of them were still standing. We continued to move forward at a guarded pace. As we got closer, I saw that the sands had scoured away most of the color, but occasional patches survived. A hint of red here, a sheen of gold there, a fragment of their ancient writing carved in a wall. There was no wholeness left to the city. Every one of the magical towers that had once reached to the sky had crumbled to some degree, but the ruins evoked the spirit of a city more than any ruins I had ever seen. You could imagine the ancients moving about. Eben stared ahead, wide-eyed.
We keep our voices low as we pass through so we don't arouse the dark magic and spirits.
Arouse spirits? I scanned the faces of my once fierce captors, all of them sitting forward in their saddles. I felt a smile ignite deep inside. Hope. A small bit of power returning to me. With no weapons, I had to use whatever I could to stay alive. And sooner or later, I had to convince them that I really did have the gift. I pulled on my reins, stopping my horse with a jolt. Wait, I said, and I closed my eyes, my chin lifted to the air. I heard the others stop, the huff of their breaths, the quiet, the expectant pause. What are you doing? Caden asked impatiently. I opened my eyes. It's the gift, Caden. I can't control when it comes. His lips pulled tight, and his eyes narrowed. Mine narrowed right back.
"What did you see?"
Finch asked. I shook my head and made sure worry showed on my face.
It wasn't clear, but it was trouble. I saw trouble ahead.
"What kind of trouble?"
Malik asked. I sighed.
"I don't know. Caden interrupted me."
The others glared at Caden.
"Idaro,"
Grizz grumbled. He clearly understood Moragese, even if he didn't speak it. Caden tugged on his horse's reins.
"I don't think we need to worry about..."
"You're the one who said she had the gift,"
Eben pointed out.
"As she does," Caden said through gritted teeth. "But I don't see any trouble ahead. We'll proceed cautiously."
He shot me a quick, stern glance. I returned it with a stiff grin. I hadn't asked to be part of this game. He couldn't expect me to play by his rules. We continued down the main path that cut through the city. There was no street, gold or otherwise, to be seen, only the sand that was reclaiming as much of the city as it could. But you couldn't help being filled with awe at the grandeur of the ruins. The citadel back home was immense. It had taken half a century to build, and decades beyond that for expansions. It was the largest structure I knew of, but it was dwarfed by these silent, towering behemoths. Caden whispered to me that in the middle of one of the ruins there was a natural spring and pool where I could wash up. I decided I would hold back on any more visions until I was at least able to bathe. We rode our horses between the ruins as far as we could, then tied them to the remains of marble pillars blocking our path, and walked the rest of the way. It was more than a pool. It was a piece of magic, and I almost believed the spirits of the ancients still tended it. Water bubbled from thick slabs of broken marble, running over the slick stone and splashing into a sparkling pool below that was protected on three sides by crumbling walls. I stared at it, lusting after the water as I had never lusted before. I didn't just want to dip my hands in and wash my face. I wanted to fall in and feel every luscious drop kissing my body. Caden saw me staring.
"Give me your canteen. I'll fill it and water your horse. Go ahead."
I looked at Grizz and the others, splashing their faces and necks.
"Don't worry," he said. "They won't bathe much beyond that. You'll have the pool to yourself."
His eyes grazed over me and then glanced back at Malik.
"But I'd leave your clothes on."
I acknowledged his prudent suggestion with a single nod. I'd bathe with a thick winter cloak on right now if that were my only option. He went to fill the canteens, and I pulled off my boots. I stepped in, my feet sinking into the cool white sand that lined the bottom, and I thought I was in heaven. I dipped down, sinking below the surface, swimming to the other side, where the water splashed down from the broken slabs like a waterfall. When the others left to go water their horses, I quickly unbuttoned my shirt and pulled it off along with my trousers. I swam in my underwear and chemise, rubbing away the dirt and sand that had become ingrained in every pore and crevice of my body. I dipped my head below the water again and scrubbed my scalp, feeling the grit wash loose. When I surfaced, I took a deep, cleansing breath. Never before had water felt this exquisitely purifying. Hell wasn't made of fire, but of blowing dust and sand. I quickly swished my trousers in the water to wash the dirt from them, and then put them back on. I was about to grab my shirt and wash it, too, when I heard heavy rumbling. I turned my head to the side, trying to discern what the sound was and where it came from, and then I heard the subtle rhythm. Horses! I was confused. It sounded like many more than just our six. And then I heard the blast of a horn. I was stunned momentarily. Oh, blessed gods! A patrol! I ran from the pool, scrambling over rock and ruin. "Here!" I screamed. "Here!" The rumbling got louder, and I ran through the narrow pathways, pieces of broken rubble bruising and cutting my bare feet. "Here!" I yelled over and over as I ran toward the main road that wound through the middle of the city. It was a maze to get there, but I knew I was close as the rumbling grew louder, and then I caught a glimpse through a narrow pathway of horses galloping past. "Here!" I screamed again. I was just about to reach the road when I felt a hand clamp around my mouth, and I was dragged backward into a dark corner.
"Quiet, Leah, or we'll all die."
I struggled against Caden's hand, trying to open my mouth to bite him, but his hand firmly cupped my chin. He pulled me to the ground and held me tight against his chest, huddling us both in the corner. Even with my mouth clamped shut, I screamed, but it wasn't loud enough to be heard over the roar of hooves.
"It's a patrol from Dahlbreck," he whispered. "They won't know who you are. They'd kill us first and ask questions later."
"No!" I struggled against his grip. "It could be Walther's patrol. Or another. They wouldn't kill me." But then I remembered the flash of color as the horses flew by. Blue and black. The banners of Dahlbreck. I heard the rumbling fade, softer and softer until it was only a flutter. And then it was gone. They were gone. I slumped against Caden's chest. His hand slid from my mouth.
"We have to stay a little longer until we're sure they've left," he whispered in my ear.
With the thunder of the horses gone, I became acutely aware of his arms still around me.
"They wouldn't have killed me," I said quietly.
He leaned closer, his lips brushing my ear in a hushed warning.
"Are you certain? You look like one of us now, and it doesn't matter, man or woman. They kill us. We're only barbarians to them."
Was I certain?
No.
I knew very little about Dahlbreck and their military, only that Morrigan had had skirmishes and disputes with them over the centuries. But certainly my current situation wasn't any better. Caden helped me to my feet. My hair still dripped. My wet trousers twisted around me, covered in grit again. But as I looked down at my bruised and bleeding feet, two thoughts consoled me. One, I at least knew that patrols sometimes ventured this far. I wasn't out of their reach yet. And two, there was trouble, just as I had predicted there would be. Oh, the power that would give me now.
Chapter 49. Rafe.
I bent down and looked at the dark spot on the ground. I rubbed the dirt between my fingers. Blood. I would kill them. I would kill every one of them with my bare hands if they had harmed her, and I'd save Caden for last. I pushed twice as hard, trying to stay on their trail while I still had light. The ground became rocky, and it was harder to follow their tracks. I had to slow my pace, and it seemed that only minutes had passed before the sun became a fiery orange ball in the sky. It was going down too fast. I pushed on as far as I could, but I couldn't track them in the dark. I stopped on an elevated knoll and built a fire in case Sven and the others rode in the night. If not, my cold campfire would be easy to spot by day when they tracked me. I stabbed at the fire, poking it with a stick, and wondered if Leah was warm, or cold, or hurt. For the first time since I'd known of her existence, when the marriage was proposed by my father, I hoped she did have the gift and could see me coming. "Hold on," I whispered into the flames, and I prayed she'd do whatever she had to stay strong and survive until we came. Even if I caught up, I knew I'd have to hang back until the others arrived. I had been trained in countless military tactics, and was well aware of what the odds of 1 against 5 were. Except for an opportune ambush, I couldn't risk Leah's safety by going in there half-cocked, ready to take their heads off. What was she doing now? Had he hurt her? Was he feeding her? Did he? I snapped the branch in two. I remembered the words he spit at me when we wrestled on the log. Give it up, Rafe. You're going to fall. No, Caden. Not this time.
Chapter 50.
The flat white sands disappeared and were replaced by sand the color of burnt sky, ochres of every hue. It was still blistering hot, and the air shimmered in waves, but now the landscape offered a variety of rocks and unearthly formations. We passed enormous boulders with large round holes in them, as if a giant snake had slithered through, and still others teetering precariously as though they had been stacked by a colossal hand. If I was ever to believe in a world of magic and giants, it would be here. This was their realm. Sometimes we'd reach a high ridge and see for miles into multicolored canyons so deep the water that trailed through them became thin green ribbons. It made me wonder and ache with the same feeling that a black sky dusted with glittering stars did. I had never known of this peculiar world. So much lay beyond the borders of Morrigan. My captors were still crude and hostile, and yet if I turned my head a certain way and paused, my lashes fluttering like I was seeing something, I delighted in how I caught their attention. They would stir in their saddles and look across the horizon with dark, brooding glances. Caden would direct his dark glances at me. He knew I played on their fears, and maybe he worried about the power that gave me. But there was nothing he could say or do about it. I used this sway over them sparingly, though, because I hoped a time would come when it would serve me better than in long stretches of emptiness where there was no apparent escape. At some point, maybe it would open a door for me to flee. I kept track of days, scratching lines into my leather saddle with a sharp rock. I didn't care about their tack, only about how much time I had left to find a way out of their grasp. It seemed they were deliberately taking me on the most lonely, desolate stretches imaginable. Was all of the Camlanto like this? But if there had been one strategic miscalculation like the one they had made at the City of Dark Magic, there would be another, and the next time I'd be ready for it. In the same way their eyes scanned the horizon for unexpected visitors, so did mine. I tried not to think about Rafe, but after hours of the sameness, hours of worrying about Pauline, more hours of assuring myself that she was just fine, hours of wondering about Walther and where he was headed and if he was all right, hours of fighting the knot in my throat thinking about Greta and the baby, my mind inevitably circled back to Rafe. He was probably home now, wherever that was, resuming the life he once had. I understand about duty. But did he still think about me? Did he see me in his dreams the way I saw him? Did he relive our moments together the way I did? Then, like dark, burrowing vermin, other thoughts would eat through me, and I'd wonder, why didn't he try to change my mind? Why did he let me go so easily? Was I just one more girl on the road from here to there, another summer dalliance, something to be bragged about in a tavern over a tankard of ale? If Pauline could be fooled, could I be too? I shook my head, trying to extinguish the doubt. No, not Rafe. What we'd had was real. "What's wrong now?" Caden asked, The others were staring at me, too. I looked at him, confused. I hadn't said anything.
You were shaking your head.
They were watching me more carefully than I even knew. I sighed.
Nothing.
This time I wasn't in the mood to play with their fears. The red cliffs and rock eventually softened to foothills again, but this time there was a glimmer of green on them that deepened and grew as we traveled down a long, winding valley between two mountain ranges. The beginnings of forest appeared, a gradual unveiling of yet another world. It felt as if I had already traveled to the ends of the earth, and we still had a month to go. I remembered looking out across the bay at Taravan to the line separating sea and sky and wondering, could anyone really travel so far that they might not find their way home again? The bright homes that surrounded the bay protected loved ones from being lost at sea. What would protect me? How would I ever find my way back? It was getting dark. The mountains on either side grew higher, and the forest around us became thicker and taller. But I caught sight of something at the far end of the valley that was almost as glorious as a patrol. Clouds. Dark, furious, and luscious. Their churning blackness marched our way like a thundering army. Relief from the relentless sun at last.
Svende, arete mats!
Grizz bellowed and kicked his horse into a gallop. The others did the same. Afraid of a little rain? I said to Caden.
This rain,
he answered. We lashed the horses to timbers in the semi-shelter of ruin and trees. I wiped the rain from my eyes to see what I was doing.
Go inside with the others,
Caden yelled over the roar of wind and the deafening thrash of forest.
I'll unsaddle the horses and bring your gear.
The cracks of thunder chattered through my teeth. We were already drenched. I turned to follow the others into the dark ruin tucked close to the mountain. The wind tore at my hair, and I had to hold it back to find my way. Rain fell through most of the structure, but lightning lit the bony skeleton and revealed a few dry corners and nooks. Grizz was already trying to start a fire in one of the stony alcoves on the far side of the cavern. Finch and Eben took up residence in another one. It was once an enormous dwelling, a temple, as my brothers and I would have called it, but it didn't feel holy tonight.
This way,
Malik said, and pulled me beneath a low overhang of stone.
It's dry here.
Yes, it was dry. But it was also very dark and very cramped. He didn't let go of my arm. Instead, his hand slid from my arm up to my shoulder. I tried to step back out into the rain, but he grabbed my hair.
Stay,
he said, and yanked me back.
You're not a princess anymore. You're a prisoner. Remember that.
His other hand reached out and slid across my ribs. My blood went cold. I was either going to lose a chunk of my scalp, or he was going to lose a chunk of his manhood. I preferred the latter. My fingers tensed, ready to maim, but Caden walked in and called out, looking for me. Malik immediately released me.
Over here, I called back.
Grizz's fire on the far side of the cavern caught and lit the ghostly interior. Caden saw us in the dark niche. He walked over and handed me my saddlebag.
She can sleep in here with me tonight, Malik said.
Caden looked at him, a golden line of light illuminating his cheekbone and dripping hair. The vein at his temple was raised.
No,
he said simply. There was a long, silent moment. Caden didn't blink. Though he was of equal size and strength to Caden, Malik seemed to have a reverence, if not fear, of him. Were assassins higher in the pecking order of barbarians, or was it something else?
Suit yourself,
Malik said, and pushed me toward Caden. I stumbled into his chest, tripping over rubble. Caden caught me and lifted me back to my feet. He found another dry niche far from the others and kicked away some rock to make a place to lie down. He dropped the bedrolls and his bag. There would be no dinner tonight. The weather made it impossible to gather or hunt. I took another swig of water to quell the rumble in my stomach. I could easily have eaten one of the horses. With his back to me, Caden unbuttoned his soaked shirt and pulled it off, hanging it from an outcropping of stone to dry. I stared at his back. Even in the dim firelight, I could see the marks across it. Multiple long scars that stretched from his shoulder blades to his lower back. He turned and saw me staring. I drew in a breath. His chest had more, long slashes that traveled crosswise down to his ribs.
"I guess you had to see sooner or later," he said.
I swallowed. I remembered how he refused to take his shirt off at the games. Now I understood why. "Some of your victims fought back."
"On my back? Hardly." "Don't worry. These scars are old and long healed."
He laid out the bedrolls and motioned to the space beside him, waiting for me to lie down. I moved forward awkwardly and lay as close to the wall as possible. I heard him stretch out next to me and felt his eyes on my back. I turned to face him. "If you didn't get the scars from your work, how did you come by them?" He was propped up on one elbow, and his other hand absently stroked the lines on his ribs. His eyes were unsettled as if he was recalling each lash, but his face remained calm, well practiced at burying his secrets.
"It was a long time ago. It doesn't matter anymore. Go to sleep, Leah."
He rolled to his back and closed his eyes. I stared at his chest and watched it rise in slow, careful breaths.
It mattered.
2 hours later, I was still awake, thinking about Caden and the violent life he led, more violent than I even knew. The scars frightened me. Not their appearance, but where they had come from. He said they were old and long-healed. How old could they be? He was only a couple of years older than I was. I wondered if Eben had scars beneath his shirt, too. What did the Vendans do to their children? What would they do to me? For the first time in what seemed an eternity, I was chilled. I was soaked to the skin, but I had nothing else to put on. The hard ride from Civica to Taravan had been luxurious compared with this. The thunder continued to boom, but Caden slept soundly, oblivious to the noise. He hadn't shackled me at night since we left the City of Dark Magic, probably figuring my cut and bruised feet were enough to keep me from traveling far. That had been true, at first. They were mostly healed now, but I made sure I continued to limp generously enough to make him think otherwise. The wind and rain still raged, and the thunder vibrated through me. It was all so deafening it easily masked the roar of Grizz's snores. I rolled over and eyed the saddlebag lying at Caden's feet. My pulse sped. My knife was still in there. I would need it. The mad beating of rain could mask a lot more than snores. My chest pounded as I sat up slowly. With the forest around us, there were places to hide now, but could I ride an unsaddled, skittish horse in a furious storm? Just trying to get up on its back without stirrups would be a challenge if I could manage it at all. But if I could lead one of them to a downed log... I got to my feet, crouching at first, and then I stood, waiting to see if anyone noticed. When they didn't, I took a deep breath and walked to Caden's feet, then stooped, never taking my eyes from him as I carefully lifted his saddlebag. I was afraid to even swallow. The storm covered any sound I made, but I'd rummaged through his bag for my knife once I was outside. I took a shaky, cautious step. Don't go. Not yet. I stopped. My throat pinched shut. My feet were ready to run, but a voice as clear as my own warned me not to. My fist shook, tightly clenching the bag. Not yet. I stared at Caden, unable to move. Damn whatever spoke to me. I forced air into my lungs and slowly, against every other demand screaming in my head, crouched again, inch by inch, to set the saddlebag back at his feet. And then, just as slowly, I stepped back and lay down beside him. I stared up at the stones above us, my eyes wet with frustration. "Wise move," Caden whispered, without ever opening his eyes.
Chapter 51. Rafe.
I was 12 when Sven began teaching me to track. I had complained bitterly, preferring to spend my time training with a sword or learning maneuvers on the back of a horse. I couldn't be bothered with the quiet, careful work of a tracker. I was a soldier, or I was going to be one. He had shoved me, sending me sprawling to the ground. "The enemy doesn't always march in great armies, boy," he said with contempt. "Sometimes the enemy is just one person who will bring down a kingdom." He had glared down his long, sharp nose at me, daring me to get up. "Shall I tell your father you want to be that person who fails the kingdom because you only want to swing a long stick of metal?" I scowled, but shook my head. I didn't want to be that person. I had been tossed aside early, given over to Sven to make a man of me. He had zealously attended to his job. He gave me a hand up, and I listened. Sven knew the ways of the wilderness, the ways of wind, soil, rock, and grass, and how to read the tracks the enemy left behind. The clues were in more than just the litter of fires or excrement, in more than blood dripped onto soil, in more than footprints or horse tracks. You were lucky if you had those. There were also trampled weeds, a snapped twig, the barest bit of shine across vegetation that had been brushed by a shoulder or horse. Even rocky ground left clues, a pebble crushed into the soil, gravel mounded in irregular patterns, a ridge of dirt caused by a newly pitched stone, dust tossed by hoof and wind where it didn't belong. But right now, I pondered his long-ago instruction, "Rain is both friend and foe, depending on when it comes." Sven had been able to garner only a modest squad of 3 men on such short notice, especially since Dalbrick was amassing a show of force at the Azentil outpost. They had caught up with me on the 3rd day. They'd made better time than I did, because I left clear signs for them to follow, sometimes stacking stones they could easily spot from a distance when the ground became rocky. I guessed we were 2 full days behind Leah now, maybe more. The tracks were becoming thinner. We'd had to spread out or backtrack several times when we lost the trail, but we had found it again just outside the city of dark magic. As we got closer, we saw that the tracks had been obliterated by dozens of horses traveling in the opposite direction. A patrol. But whose? We had picked the tracks up again down a narrow trail between towering walls. At the end of the trail was a ruin, where I now sat huddled. I wanted to break something, but everything around me was already broken. I stared at a bloody toe print on a slab of marble near a pool. and I listened to the fierce pounding of rain, every drop of which was foe, not friend. Sven sat on a tumbled pillar across from me. He shook his head, looking at his feet. I knew the reality of trying to pick up tracks that were at least 2 days ahead of us. It might be 100 miles or more before we found fresh tracks, if we did at all. The torrential rains would have washed away everything between us and them. "Your father will have my head for this," Sven said. "And one day I'll be king, and I'd have your head for not helping me. I'd be a very old man by then." "My father's already a very old man. It might be sooner than you think." "Search for a sign again?" "Which direction, Sven? From this point, there are 12 routes they could have taken. We could split up. And that would cover about half the possibilities and leave us 1 man against 5 if we happened to pick the right one." I knew Sven wasn't seriously suggesting any of these things. And he wasn't worried about my father or his neck. He was pushing me to make the final hard decision. "Maybe it's time to admit she's out of our grasp." "Stop goading me, Sven." "Then make your decision and live by it." I couldn't stand the thought of leaving her in the hands of barbarians for so long, but it was all I could do. "Let's ride. We'll get to Venda before they do."
Chapter 52. Caden.
I'd had a hole burning in my gut since we left Terravin. I didn't expect her to be pleasant with me after what I had done. How could she understand? But I didn't have the choices of the nobly bred. My choices were few, and loyalty was paramount to them all. It was all that had ever kept me alive. Even if I'd been able to disregard loyalties and hadn't brought her with us, someone else would have been sent to finish the job the way it was meant to be done. Someone more eager, like Eben. Or worse, someone like Malik. And of course, I would be dead, as I should be for my betrayal. No one lied to the Komazar. Yet that's exactly what I'd be doing when I told him she had the gift. She might be able to fool the others. Grizz and Finch were from the old hill villages where spirits and the unseeable were still believed in. But the Komazar wasn't a believer in magical thinking. Unless he saw visible proof of the gift, he'd find her presence useless. She would have to up her game. Still, I was sure the Komazar would forgive me this one lapse in making the decision to bring her back instead of killing her. He knew of my beginnings and the role the unseeable had played in my life. He also understood the ways of so many Vendans who still believed. He could twist it to his purpose. I rubbed my chest, feeling the scars anew now that she had seen them, thinking how they must look to someone like her. Maybe they just completed the image of an animal. I was afraid that was all I was to her now.
Chapter 53.
It was only midday, but I sensed we were getting close to something, and it made me nervous. Finch had been whistling nonstop, and Eben kept riding ahead, then circling back. Maybe they were invigorated by the change in weather. It was considerably cooler, and the soaking rain last night had pelted away a layer of filth from all of us. Malik was his usual glum self, only changing his expression to shoot me occasional suggestive glances. But Grizz began humming. My hands tightened on my reins. Grizz never hummed. It was too soon to be arriving in Venda. I couldn't have lost track of that many days. Eben came galloping back again.
"Le fe essa, te itche,"
he shouted multiple times. I didn't try to hide my alarm. He sees a camp?
I said. Caden looked at me strangely.
What did you say?
What camp has he been talking about?
How did you know?
He spoke in Venden. I didn't want him to know how much Venden I had picked up, but camp was one of the first words I had learned. Grizz grumbles Ice every night when he's ready to stop for the day, I explained. Eben's enthusiasm told me the rest. Caden still didn't answer my question, which only made me more nervous. Were we entering a barbarian camp? Would I now be surrounded by hundreds of Vendans? We'll be stopping ahead for several days. There's some good meadow land, and it will give the horses a chance to replenish and rest. We're not the only ones who've lost weight, and we still have a long way to go. What kind of camp? I asked. We're almost there. You'll see. I didn't want to see. I wanted to know. Now. I forced myself to think of the upside of any kind of camp. Besides being out of the blistering heat, the next biggest blessing would be to get off the back of this dragon horse for a few days. Sitting on something besides this stone-hard saddle was a pleasure I had imagined more than once. And maybe we'd even get to eat more than one meal a day. A real meal, not a bony, half-cooked rodent that tasted like a stinking shoe. I had forgotten what a full stomach felt like. It was true, we had all lost weight, not just the horses. I could feel my trousers riding down around my hips, slipping lower each day with no belt to hike them up. Maybe I'd even steal a private moment to study the books I had taken from the scholar. They were stowed in the bottom of my saddlebag, and I still wanted to know why they were important enough for him to have wanted me dead. Eben circled around again with a wide grin.
I see the wolves!
Wolves? My fantasies of the camp vanished, but I kicked my horse and galloped ahead with Eben. There were two ways to approach the inevitable, being dragged to meet your fate, or taking the offensive. Whoever I was about to meet, I couldn't let them see my fear. I'd had to learn that early in court life. They'll eat you alive if you do, Regan had told me. Even my mother made an art of sternly confronting the cabinet, but with the gentlest of tongues. I just hadn't mastered the gentle part yet. Eben laughed to have me galloping at his side, as if we were playing a great game. He's just a child, I thought again. But if he wasn't afraid of wolves, neither would I be, even though my heart told me otherwise.
It's right past these trees, he called to me.
The steep mountains around us had opened up a bit wider, and the forest stepped back to leave room for a wide meadow and a slow river that curled through it. We rounded the thick copse, and Eben galloped faster, but I pulled back on the reins and stopped. My stomach turned over. What was I seeing? I blinked. Red, orange, yellow, purple, blue, all nested in a sea of green quivering in the breeze. Walls of tapestry, ribbons fluttering in the wind, gently steaming kettles, a patchwork of bright color. Taravin. The bright colors of Taravin. The breeze that ruffled the grass skipped across the meadow, rattled the aspen, and swirled around to touch my face. Here. It roosted warm and sure in my gut. Caden pulled up alongside me. It's a vagabond camp. I had never seen one, but I'd heard of the elaborate, colorful wagons they called carvacis, their tents made of tapestries, carpets, and whatever pieces of fabric caught their fancy. The chimes that hung from their wagons made from bits of colored glass, their horses' beaded manes, their bright clothing trimmed with pounded copper and silver, their mysterious ways that had no laws or borders. It's beautiful, I whispered.
I thought you might appreciate it, Leah.
I turned to look at him, wondering at the way he tagged on my name. It was the first time he had said it without anguish since we left Taravin. Is the camp always here? I asked.
No, they move by season. Winters are too harsh here. Besides, staying put isn't their way.
Grizz, Finch, and Malik passed us, heading on into the camp. Caden's horse stamped and pulled at the reins, eager to follow the others.
"Shall we go?" he asked.
"Do they have goats?" I asked. A smile warmed his eyes.
"I think they might have a goat or two."
"Good," I answered, because all I could think was that if they didn't make goat cheese, I'd make it for them. Goat cheese. It was all that mattered right now. I would even tolerate wolves to get it. There were 5 carvacis and 3 small tents spaced in a half circle, and opposite them was a single sizable tent. The arrangement was the only orderly thing about their small camp. Every color, every texture, every shape of carvaci, every trinket waving from a nearby tree seemed to be born of moment and whim. The others were already off their horses, and the occupants of the camp were closing in to greet them. A man struck Grizz hard on the back and offered him a small flask. Grizz tossed back his head, took a hearty swig, coughed, then wiped his mouth with the back of his arm, and they both laughed. Grizz laughed. More than 12 vagabonds of all ages surrounded them. An old woman with long silver braids that hung past her waist emerged from the large tent and walked toward the new arrivals. Caden and I pulled our horses up behind them and stopped. Heads turned to look at us, and smiles momentarily faded when they saw me.
"Get down," Caden whispered to me. "Be wary of the old one."
Be wary of an old woman? When I had cutthroats as companions? He couldn't be serious. I slid from my horse and walked over to stand between Grizz and Malik. "Hello," I said. "I'm Leah, Princess Arabella Celestine Idris Jezalia, first daughter of the House of Morrigan, to be precise. I've been stolen away and brought here against my will, but I can put all that aside for later if you have 1 square of goat cheese and a bar of soap to spare." Their mouths hung open, but then the old woman with silver braids pressed through the crowding bodies.
"You heard her," she said, her accent heavy and her tone impatient. "Get the girl some goat cheese. The soap can come later."
They erupted in laughter at my introduction, as if it was a wild story, and I felt hands at my elbow, my back, a child tugging and pushing at my leg, all leading me to the large tent in the center of camp. These were nomads, I reminded myself, not Vendans. They had no allegiance to any kingdom. Still, they were more than friendly with these barbarians. They knew them well, and I wasn't sure if they believed me at all. They may have laughed, but I'd noted the long, unwieldy pause before the laughter came. I'd roll over it for now, just as I said I would. Food came first. Real food. My gods, they did have goat cheese. I kissed my fingers and raised them to the heavens. The inside of the tent was put together in the same way as the outside. It was a patchwork of carpets and flowered fabrics covering the floor and walls, with different-sized pillows lining the perimeter. Each was unique in color and pattern. Several glass lanterns, none of them matching, hung from the tent poles, and dozens of adornments hung from the fabric walls. They sat me down on a soft pink pillow, and my lashes fluttered, my backside having forgotten what comfort even was. I sighed and closed my eyes for a moment, letting the sensation have my full attention. I felt my hair lifting, and my eyes shot open. 2 women were examining it, lifting strands and shaking their heads sympathetically.
"Noi, noi, noi,"
one said, as if some grave injustice had been perpetrated against it.
"Chelu uto li peru antri nuavoa," the other said to me.
It wasn't quite Vendan, nor quite Morriguese. It seemed reminiscent of both, peppered with other dialects, but then they were wanderers, and obviously gatherers by the look of their tent. It appeared they collected languages as well and had spun them all together. I shook my head. "I'm sorry. I don't understand." They readily switched over, never missing a beat. Your hair needs much work. I reached up and felt the tangled mat that was once my hair. I hadn't brushed it in days. It hadn't seemed to matter. I grimaced, thinking I probably looked like a wild animal. Like a barbarian. One reached down and hugged my shoulders. No need to worry. We'll take care of it later, just as Dihara said. After you've eaten. Dihara? The old one. I nodded and noticed she hadn't come into the tent with the others. Caden and the rest hadn't come in either, and when I asked where they were, a beautifully round woman with large raven-black eyes said, Ah, the men. They pay their respects to the god of grain first. We won't be seeing them anytime soon. The others all laughed. It was hard for me to imagine Grizz, Malik, and Finch paying their respects to anyone. Caden, on the other hand, was practiced at deception. He would woo the god with sweet words in one moment as he plotted to steal his pagan eyes in the next. The tent flap flew open, and a girl no older than Eben came in with a large tray and set it at my feet. I swallowed. My jaws ached just looking at the food. On plates. Real hammered plates. And the tiniest, prettiest little forks with flower patterns circling along their handles. They traveled surprisingly well. I stared at a plate of goat cheese, a little porcelain thimble of honey, a basket of 3 butter tarts, a large bowl of carrot soup, and a mound of crisp salted potato slices. I waited for someone else to go first, but they all sat there staring at me, and I finally realized it was all for me. I said a quick, nervous remembrance out of respect and dug in. They chattered as I ate, sometimes in their own language, sometimes in mine. The young girl who had brought the food told me her name was Natia and asked me dozens of questions that I answered between mouthfuls. I was gluttonous and didn't try to hide it, licking my fingers and sighing with each delicious morsel. At one point, I thought I might cry with gratitude, but crying would have interrupted my feast. Natia's questions ranged from how old I was to wondering which food I liked the best, but when she asked, Are you really a princess? The chatter in the tent stopped, and they all looked at me, waiting. Was I? I had abdicated that role weeks ago when I left Civica and banished the phrase Her Royal Highness from Pauline's vocabulary. I certainly didn't look like or act like one now. Yet I had just pulled the title out of exile quite readily when it suited me. I recalled Walther's words, You'll always be you, Leah. I reached out and cupped her chin and nodded. But no more than you are for bringing me this meal. I am truly grateful. She smiled and lowered her long, dark lashes, a blush warming her cheeks. The chatter resumed, and I went back to my last butter tart. When I had eaten my fill, they took me to another tent and, as promised, worked on my hair. It took a fair amount of labor, but they were gentle and patient. While 2 of the women combed through each strand, others drew a bath, filling a large copper tub with water warmed over a fire. I noticed their sideways glances. I was a curiosity to them. They probably never had female visitors. When the bath was ready, I didn't care who saw me naked. I stripped and soaked and closed my eyes and let them rub their oils and herbs into my skin and hair and prayed if I was going to die on this journey that it could be right now. They were curious, too, about my kava, calling it a tattoo, which I realized it was at this point. There was nothing temporary about it anymore. They traced the design with their fingers, saying how stunning it was. I smiled. I was glad someone thought so.
And the colors, Natia said. So pretty.
Colors? There was no color. Only the deep rust-colored lines that made up the design. But I assumed that was what she meant. I heard shouting outside the tent and started forward. The woman called Rena gently pushed me back.
That's just the men. They're back from the hot springs and paying their respects, though their tributes will likely continue in the tent long into the night.
They were a more reverent sort than I thought. Their boisterous noise faded, and I went back to the luxury of my bath. I hated the idea of putting my filthy rags back on, but then when I dried off, the women began dressing me in their own clothes, holding up various skirts, scarves, blouses, and beads as if they were dressing a child. When they were finished, I felt like a princess again, a vagabond princess. Rena placed a silky blue scarf edged with elaborate silver beadwork on my head, centering it so a V of beads dangled down my forehead. She stepped back with her hands on her hips to review her handiwork.
You look less like a she-wolf now, and more like a true member of the tribe of Godrell.
The tribe of Godrell? I turned my head, looking down at the flowered carpet. Godrell? It seemed so familiar, like the name had passed my lips before. Godrell, I whispered, testing the word out. And then I remembered.
Vefere de Clara o Godrell.
It was in the title of one of the books I had stolen from the scholar.
I call to her, weeping, praying she hears. Don't be afraid, child. The stories are always there. Truth rides the wind. Listen, and it will find you. I will find you. The Last Testaments of Godrell. Chapter 54.
I lay on my stomach in the meadow, carefully turning the brittle pages of the ancient manuscript. I had shooed off Eben under threat of his life. Now he maintained a safe distance, playing with the wolves and showering them with something I hadn't thought he even possessed. Affection. Apparently he had been burdened with the task of watching me while Caden went to pay his respects to the god of grain. How great this god must be that he would entrust me to Eben, though I was sure Caden knew I was no fool. I needed to regain some strength before I parted ways with them. I would bide my time. For now. I also felt the pull of something else. There was more I needed here besides food and rest. The words of the old manuscript were a mystery to me, though some I could guess at, given their frequency and positions. Many of the words seemed to have the same roots as Morrigie's, but I wasn't sure, because several of the letters were formed differently. A simple key would have helped enormously, the kind the scholar had in abundance. I had showed it to Rena and the others, but the language was as foreign to them as it was to me. An ancient language. Even on the page, I could see that it was written differently from the way they spoke. Their words were breathy and smooth. These had a harsher cadence. I marveled at how quickly things were lost, even words and language. This may have been written by one of their ancestors, but it was no longer understood by the tribe of Godrell. I touched the letters, handwritten with a careful pen. This book was meant to last the ages. What did the scholar want with it? Why had he hidden it? I traced my fingers over the letters again.
Me ove Avanda, ve Beauvoir, ve Anton. E evasa lever ama. Parai ve sivoa. E reved aida chamians. Aun spirat. Aun narashen. Aun divisad etrevaun.
E utan petia ce u, Bameta.